Okay, we'll make a start, ladies and gentlemen, because there's a time pressure here. My name's Peter Sheridan. I'm Chief Executive of Cooperation Ireland, and I'm also Chair of the Irish Peace Centres. What I'm going to do is, you see some questions here. I'm going to use some of those questions to ask the panel, and then if you have any questions in the audience, I'll take some of those questions, and I'm going to finish up by just reading out some of the comments on the blue sky thinking. But just maybe to start off, to give us a sense of some of the questions, I'll maybe read out a few of these, and then I'll introduce our panel. And by that time, Naomi Long may have made her way to the mastermind chair. Okay. Forget a shared future, what about a shared present? Unionists to drive on the right, nationalists on the left, an alliance in the middle of the road. No more selective schools. Just pretend everything is okay. Can we build a shared and peaceful future without dealing with the past? Question mark. A pattern for housing. Okay, we'll come back to some of those. Okay, so our panel, I was going to say, need no introduction, particularly because Naomi wasn't here at the time. She didn't need no introduction. And we've now lost Chris Little somewhere in the middle of it. We've now lost Chris Little, if anybody knows where he went in the middle of it. But first of all, to my right is Noreen Campbell, Chief Executive of Northern Ireland Integrated Council for Integrated Integrated Education. Naomi, Anna Long, Breeze Gadd, who's former head of the Probation Board, is also on the Managing Committee of the Irish Peace Centres and formerly recently there of the Big Lottery. So let's, is there anybody has a really burning question before I go to the clothes dryers over here? Or will I start over here? Okay. So there's the very first question, which is a good one, mate. Maybe start it off. Given that Enda Kenny talked about peace building needs to be integrated into all aspects of life, he talked about it as part of policy formation and being integrated into institutional society building. What is peace? What is peace, Breach?
Peter, before I answer, can I ask you where you got those clothes hangers? Because they're really... they're really hard to get. I don't know what... Peace, obviously, is the absence of war. It's the absence of violence, although there's no society that is completely absent of violence. I'm not sure if... can you hear me okay? Okay. I don't know, Peter, what it is. Sometimes I think we worry too much about it. And sometimes I think that we are in danger of burdening the future generation with our worries about what peace is. And if we got on and did a really good strategic plan for Northern Ireland, maybe you wouldn't need to ask that question.
Okay, Breeze. I'm not going to ask everybody in the panel to comment on every question. So, but Anne, I'll give you the go at this one. What is peace?
Obviously, it's the opposite to war, but there's also, I think, peace of mind as well, not just the physical violence, the peace of people being content with each other, or with their neighbours, with society. So I'm not too sure. I think peace would be at different levels to me. The absence of war, the absence of fighting, stability is peace as well, and peace of mind for people not in fear, and not being intimidated, and free to live and speak whatever they want.
Okay. Chris, what's your answer to that?
What is peace? I'm only joking.
Quick answer on the back of what Anna has said there is obviously that from our point of view, we want to see a proactive piece that brings people together in a live together way also, and not just the absence of violence.
Okay. Second question from, they're soon to be Breeze's clothes dryers. Noreen, has the community in Northern Ireland progressed further than the politics in Northern Ireland?
Yeah, I think definitely the community has progressed further than the politics. And I think the politics is holding on to the past because political power has traditionally been associated with tribes, and therefore the politics appeal to the lowest common denominator and don't actually recognise the changes that are happening among your person who wants to get on with their life and who wants to live in a peaceful society. And I think peace is only an issue for us in a society where peace is a given. People don't worry about do we have peace or how do we build peace. And the fact that we speak about it so much tells us that we still have a long way to go. I think the will of the community is there for it. I think that where your politics are associated with tribes, it's very difficult for the politicians to give that lead.
Naomi, in keeping with our clothes hangers and at the risk of being left hung out to dry, what are the questions that Alliance are asking themselves in peace?
Well, I suppose, it really follows on from the last question and whether or not the community has moved ahead of politics. I actually don't think that it has. I wish that it did, but I think it has in places and not in others. I also think that it's easy for the community to appear that they have moved on in times when there is an absence of violence and when things are more settled, but when an event happens, people very quickly polarise again into those traditional divided communities. And so I think that we need to be optimistic for the future. And I think that that's something that the party's very focused on, is trying to talk to people in an optimistic way about the possibilities for the future and what we can achieve together. But we also at the same time cannot afford to be complacent about the dangers for Northern Ireland society. When division is as ingrained as it has been for so long and so deep, you can never be complacent about the fact that we're seeing positive change. So we have to keep pressing forward with change. And for me and for the party, the questions that we're asking ourselves, I suppose, is how do we communicate that in a way that isn't always about the past, but is much, much more about the future? It's talking about where we go from here and how we keep building on it, because my fear is if we stop moving forward, inevitably we start to slide backwards.
In your speech this morning, you said that it's not about the last achievements, it's about the next achievements. So what are the next achievements in terms of peace building that the Alliance Party see? Nail some of them down for us.
Well, I think that there are achievements that we should celebrate. I think the growth in integrated education is something that we should celebrate, but we have not gone half as far as I would have liked. So I think one of the achievements that we would want to see is an acceptance, and it needs to be quick, that the way forward for education in difficult financial times is an integrated model. Because my fear is that if we rationalise within a divided model, we will lose an opportunity for this generation to actually effect real change. So that's one priority. The other priority for me, I have to say, is housing. I think that the fact that we still live in such segregated environments actually exacerbates the problem we have with our divided education. If people went to faith-based schools and came home at night to the same streets and played together and knew each other, it wouldn't be half so bad, but they don't. The reality is that most people in Northern Ireland live in entirely segregated communities. And for me, tackling the issue of segregated housing, not just because I think in principle it's right, but also because in practice it's necessary. We meet people every day who don't fit the mould of one community or another. We meet people in the Catholic community who are involved with PSNI, who come from traditionally Republican backgrounds and suddenly have nowhere to go and no community to live in where they feel safe. We meet people from unionist backgrounds who don't really feel comfortable with flags and emblems and curbstone paintings and feel intimidated by that environment and have nowhere to go. So there's a growing number of people, I think, in our community who want to see change. And there are people who come to our community from outside who feel that there is nowhere for them, because the assumption is that you not only have the right to choose where you live, but who lives beside you. And that needs to change. you don't have the right to control your community. You have a right to be part of it, and that's all.
But in terms of doing something radical about it, because if 95% of our social housing is segregated, a pattern for housing is on the blue sky thinking.
I saw that, and I mean, I'm not sure that a pattern for housing is how I would put it, but if you're asking me, should we be proactively seeking out opportunities for shared housing? Should we be supporting those areas that are already shared and ensuring that people can't intimidate others out of their community? That those who do the intimidating are those who are moved and not the people who are actually being intimidated. There are basic things that we can do to protect the level of sharing we already have and to increase opportunities. If you ask people what they want, they say they want to share. The difficulty is that the opportunities for it are limited, and government's job is to try and provide the opportunities, not to create the will for it. The will has to come from the people, but you've got to facilitate it when it's there, and we don't even do that at the moment. And I think that that's something, to be fair to the Department of Social Development, I think that that is something that is on their radar. But to deal with it, we have got to remove this right to live in a segregated community, which lies at the core of housing allocations. You don't have the right to live in a single identity community. You have the right to live in peace and security wherever you live, and that's what we need to protect.
Okay. So, David Ford talked this morning about a rising star in the Alliance Party. So who's got a question for Chris Little? From the floor. Thank you. Question for Chris Little. Let me use my.
Well, I live in Beaver, and I was trying to get onto they've started a shared neighbourhood scheme, but because one of the groups I was in actually had problems with, and I left on the committee, and as a result, because I'm an individual, I can't get involved with the shared neighbourhoods, well, at least at present, although it's not the fault of the housing executive, because they were actually want me on, but the groups won't accept. And one of the people actually in the groups has actually threatened me, and the housing executive have a note of the fact. Really, the people should be involved. Really, groups are.
What's the question? Give me the question.
Those sort of things like shared neighbourhood, do you not think that it's better that the people are actually involved rather than groups who may have an agenda that's not really in the interest of everybody?
I mean, yes, to answer quickly, yeah, the community consultation should be as wide as possible. If there's a particular issue in, you know, individual inquiry there, I'm sure your MLA for South Belfast might be willing to look into that for you. But no, there's a couple of neighbourhood plans going on in East Belfast at the moment, and the driving principle behind them is community survey, community consultation, and ultimately if you want the project and the shared neighbourhood to succeed, it needs to be as inclusive as possible.
And Chris, you can keep the microphone there. Can a middle class party solve a working class problem?
Who's the middle class party we're referring to here?
I'm just reaching for the questions as I hang here.
if you want me to answer from our party point of view, I mean, my colleagues joining me here today are not from what you would necessarily call a middle-class background. I'm not originally from a middle-class background, from an area of East Belfast where my parents had to work extremely hard to try and give me some of the opportunities that I have to further myself, to get involved with public service. We work with working-class communities on a daily basis in East Belfast and across Northern Ireland, so I think we are relevant to people from a range of backgrounds. And we have to be.
Naomi's itching to get a hold of that microphone. She doesn't want to be classed as middle class either.
No, well, I mean, the answer is no. A middle class party couldn't solve the problems of a working class community, but that's why you need a form of politics that isn't based on class distinctions. You need a form of politics that actually deals with issues and with people as individuals. And it goes back to the point that was made earlier. We can't move from a situation where we have one group of people having their rights trodden on to a situation where we establish some kind of group rights, and those who don't fit the group, then have their rights trodden on. We have to focus on individual rights and respecting the individual. It's not about being middle class or working class or upper class. It's about the principles and the values that you share, and it's about trying to deliver those in every situation. And I don't think that it's all driven by money and class. I actually think it's driven by principles and values, and I think that that's how you solve problems, regardless of which communities you're in.
And somebody from the middle class, British.
I'm from good old rural Northern Ireland class, Peter. I think this is beginning to be a wee bit like a party political broadcast on behalf of the Alliance Party. So I'm going to put, what's the expression, put the cat among the pigeons. I think the answer to your question is yes. A middle class party can solve other people's problems. I mean, if they can't, and it's not just about class, let's go out of business. I'll give you an example. Kenneth Clark as Home Secretary, in my view, is much nearer to solving the problems that people from poor areas have with regard to crime and punishment and rehabilitation than Jack Straw ever was. And I think he has a closer grasp of what makes people commit crime and what makes people come out of crime, which is essentially very much about what people in poor areas are concerned about. I'm very uncomfortable with the idea of working in middle class because I think lines are blurred now. And I suppose my challenge to Alliance is, yes, you certainly do work in areas which would be considered not to be the richest areas. You also work in areas that are considered to be the richest areas. But, you know, how much time do politicians spend with the really dispossessed and the disenchanted? How prepared are you, for example, to go into Republican areas and look at what the dreams and needs of people in Republican areas are, to express their Irishness and to have that sense of being Irish? Certainly the perception would be that the Alliance Party, the perception is that you're not particularly interested in that.
Was there a question? Colin. What was your original question going to be? You had a question earlier on. Is that it? Okay. Another question from the floor, or I can go to the clothes horse again. Sorry, there's one here.
Peace for me has been able to walk anywhere I want in Belfast. What would the panel think? How soon would I or my husband or my children be able to walk anywhere and feel safe?
Anna, how safe or how soon do you think this lady and her husband can walk around anywhere in Belfast?
Well, I think that's the policy of CSI should be that. Able. I think that's something, you know, the CSI document should be able to focus on. Save areas for all to enjoy, share spaces, places that people can go and work and feel safe. And we still have all the peace wars that we need to concentrate on bringing those down. But obviously we can't just knock down the peace wars. We need to have more community relations so that people don't feel fear from each other, people can trust each other, can work and live together. And I think we do have to still work very much on that. But CSI is meant to be that strategy that would make all the government departments and to help local groups to work on the ground to help to produce that. Coming back to the earlier question about housing, the CSI should be able to make social development more focus on promoting more integrated and shared housing. We had only two or three new housing housing areas fairly new in the last 2 years to be shared housing. And there are something like 35 or so share housing schemes on existing housing housing developments, housing estates, who want to do that. And okay, there needs to be more resources put into those areas to promote it. I think we need to make that the norm rather than the exception, that we all live together in peace.
Okay, I'm going to ask just Chris to comment on that as well. I'm just conscious that we have to be out of here in 5 or 6 minutes' time, otherwise the president down here will start jumping up and down. So I'm going to go this... Yeah, I'm going to come to you in a second. Just let Chris answer this.
Very brief, Peter. No, just to speak to Sarah's question and Bridge's point as well, which is a useful challenge for the party. In my work in East Belfast, in particular, as vice chairman of the District Policing Partnership, one of my most proudest moments probably was when the District Policing Partnership took its public meeting into Short Strand Community Centre. And the police officer directing proceedings was able to communicate with the community, members of the community in the Irish language. We had a significant protest from sections of the community at the day. It took us quite a bit of time to bring the meeting into order to be able to do that. But we, you know, members of the Alliance Party were present on that day, taking risks in a government project, a government scheme, to allow people to have their expression and their involvement on a very important issue, community safety and policing. And it was a great meeting in the end. We covered a lot of substantive issues despite the attempt to disrupt.
I'll give it to this lady first and then you can answer it, Tony.
Thank you. I'd like to ask Noreen how she managed to create a safe space in her school, which was in a very difficult area at very difficult times, because that might give us some key as to how we could manage it in other places.
Well, I don't know that I could answer that question in a couple of minutes, because there are so many ingredients that go into creating the sort of space where everybody can feel accepted and feel comfortable. But the key ingredient, and I think in terms of integrated education, certainly my school, was the child-centeredness. You start with the children, the individual children you have, you accept them for who they are, you give them the space to find themselves and to become themselves, as opposed to become the labels which they may have from the area or the background that have been born into. You give them the opportunities to learn about each other and with each other and from each other, and you do it in a way which is appealing to the beauty of being involved in education and working with young people is that young people are idealists. They have a huge sense of the potential of the future, and they want to be part of that. And if you can create a school that enables them to see their capacity to shape that future, and the children shape the school, so you can't take apart and say it was doing X that created a school. It's the individuals in the school create the school, and it's creating the conditions that enable them to do so, which is about building trust, building respect, respecting individuals, seeing the potential of young people to be and not just to be Catholic or Protestant or whatever labels they might have. And to go back to the earlier question, because frequently the children, when they were visiting each other in their each other's homes, they changed their names so that their names were acceptable in the area. So they couldn't go out on the street and play with their Protestant friends if their name was, one example was Saoirse. And Saoirse, when she went to play with her, to sleep over in her Protestant friend's house, became Sarah, because she couldn't go out in the street as Saoirse. Now, that was 10 years ago, and maybe things have moved on. But until you have a situation where people know each other as people, then you cannot move beyond the fact that they fear each other because they're labels as opposed to individuals and people. So I think that's the challenge for us.
Thank you, Noreen. I'm going to take one last question here from the floor here, because what? Have I? All right, that's good. Alan McBride.
Okay, thank you. This question is not meant to be sectarian, so I apologize ahead of that. It's really not. And I do think we probably need to look at the role of Protestant clergy in the schools. But seriously, if we're serious about building a shared future, is it not now time for the executive to consider stopping the funding of Catholic education?
Noreen, we'll start with you and then we'll take Naomi.
I think there is a huge opportunity at the moment to open up our education system and to move it from where we are at the moment, where you have 90% of your children educated separately, to a much healthier integration and sharing of education. And I think working with the Catholic Church is a key to the success of that. And I think my feeling about it is that it's not a matter of creating what seems like an easy solution, stopping funding. There's a whole history and there's a whole legacy of the reasons why we have the education system we have. How can we move beyond that? We can only move beyond that by challenging the different sectors, and in challenging them, I think, in a way which appeals to their best. So I think the challenge to the Catholic Church is around issues of their social justice. It's about the role of their moral obligation to be a part, an active part of creating a better society. It's their commitment to social justice and equality, and it's really holding them to account on those issues. And, you know, challenging the language which is now used by CCMS and education, which is about inclusivity and equality, and really the language we use in integration. It's saying, but how it's holding them to account for that and how that is meaningful, and making it almost impossible for the Catholic Church through that type of challenge to continue a separate system of education.
Sorry. I mean, I accept that. You know, I think that the language of the Catholic Church for years has been around equality and social justice and these things, but kids are still being caught separately. And I mean, from my perspective, and I sent my daughter to a state grammar, so people could accuse me of being a hypocrite, and perhaps I am, but the reason she went to a state grammar is because she could. There was choice, and sometimes choice isn't always a good thing, particularly when it comes to actually educating our children. Zoe went to the school that her cousins went to. That's the school she chose to go to. If all our schools were integrated, I wouldn't have, had, as a parent, been forced to make a choice to play my politics through my child. So whilst I accept what, you know, what's been said, I still think that it must be part of the solution. It's not the only part, absolutely, and I agree with Naomi when she talks about housing as well, but it has to be at least part of the solution.
A couple of short comments and then I'll come to Breeze. Yeah,
I would agree with Noreen on this one, but for lots of reasons, in that I think it's a very simplistic approach to take. I don't think that it takes into account the sensitivities or the realities that are the state sector, as it's referred to. One of the things that derailed the Education and Skills Authority was the fact that the church representatives from the Protestant churches weren't in significant enough numbers on the new Skills Authority, because the minister didn't actually recognise the control that still exists on boards of governors of state schools that are actually still in the control of the Protestant Church to some degree. And so I think that there is not a reflection of the balance, if you like. People who talk about the state sector as though it is already integrated or could be easily integrated are denying the reality that it isn't. And I think that we just need to be honest about that. I mean, I went to quite a liberal grammar school myself. It wasn't an integrated school in any shape or form. Yes, there were some Catholic teachers. Yes, there were some Catholic pupils. But was there any expression of Irish culture and Irish dimension to what we did in school? No, there wasn't. And it wasn't, to me, reflective of wider and broader traditions. Integrated education offers something very special, but I don't think you can do it by compulsion or punishment. I think you have to do it by facilitating choice. And I actually think when people are given the opportunity, they do choose it. And that's why integrated schools are oversubscribed. And I think that that's a positive thing that we should build on, rather than turning it back and being negative. One other thing I just want to say very, very briefly. In response to Sarah's question, I can't think of a place in Belfast that I wouldn't go. And I'm saying that honestly. I'm saying it honestly. I can't think of a place in Belfast that I wouldn't go to, or a person in Belfast that the idea of going to that neighbourhood, I wouldn't feel safe. And maybe that's partly because I had the opportunity through my work as an elected representative, and particularly last year, to go to communities all over Belfast, to Republican and Nationalist communities, to Loyalist communities, and to work with people and meet with them face to face and to receive the kind of welcome that really gives you heart. So I wouldn't be afraid to walk around Belfast, and I'm not afraid to walk around Belfast, but I recognise that other people perhaps haven't had the opportunity to experience that, and it's the fear of the unknown that can be a barrier in itself. Even if the communities are open and welcoming, sometimes the fear of the unknown is a really big barrier for people to overcome, and I think we need to be realistic, and that's where not just shared space that already exists needs to be used, but we need to find ways of creating shared events, shared activities, that happen in communities that we don't normally think of as shared, but that people will go to because they're good, can create a whole different dynamic in communities where people feel that's somewhere I can go because I've been to an event there, I've met some people there, and I know the lay of the land and I know where I'm going. People's biggest fear is getting lost somewhere they don't know in Northern Ireland and being spotted as different. And that's what we need to overcome. So it's familiarisation of people with local communities that really helps.
Breeze, sharp as you can, Breeze.
I'm going to say the same thing, but I'm not a politician, so I'll make it short. Alan, I have an answer for you. My three children went to state schools. They went to Protestant schools. And it's exactly Naomi's point. And they were brought up as very, very good, brilliant education, but three Protestant kids. When they went to university in Scotland, they discovered it was sexy to be Irish because of the music, and that's when they found their Irishness. So I think that doesn't invalidate anything anybody said, but we need to get to the stage when all our schools are, as Noreen says, has the same value base, but if people want to follow particular religions, let them do it. That would be my way of going forward. Peter, very quick point about my son lives in London. He and his fiancée wouldn't let us walk down the street because it's too scary. And I'm back to my original point. We should be wary that we do not bunch all problems that a modern 21st society, small country, has into being rooted in sectarianism. A lot of them are about what's happening in the world. It's about young people and older people and all sorts of things. And I think sometimes we unnecessarily complicate matters when, in fact, we just have issues to resolve, which are about creating safe places and safe communities wherever.
Thank you. Noreen, I'm conscious that you may have to go, so I don't think anybody take offence if you see Noreen slipping out. I'm going to take one last question from the floor here.
Thank you. Just watching on television, I noticed that one of the privileges of having a member of the House of Commons is she's able to ask a question directly to David Cameron, Prime Minister. I didn't hear it terribly well when it was on the television, so I'm grateful if she could repeat the question and tell us about the answer or answers that she received.
Do you remember it, Noor?
I'm not so blasé yet that speaking to the Prime Minister directly isn't still a bit of a thrill. Basically my question, the government made an announcement last week that Northern Ireland would continue to be treated differently when it comes to political donations and how those are published. And so there is a degree of opaqueness around how those donors are listed. And the question that I asked was that down to security concerns? Because that has been the argument in the past, that if you donated to political parties, your security could be compromised. Or was it just down to concerns of parties who didn't want to be exposed to the kind of openness and transparency that other parts of the UK take for granted? And that was really the question. His answer was, I'll write to you. So I'm taking that as one score to me, because he hadn't obviously been briefed by the Northern Ireland office. I wasn't expecting to be asked that question. But I'm looking forward to his answer, because I think the security situation, to be blunt, has evolved and changed. And I think people now have the right to expect the same kind of openness and the same kind of public service and delivery that you get everywhere else. And really what Bree said earlier, you can't always hide behind what happened in the past. There are times when you just need to go forward and be progressive and do the right thing. And I think maybe this is one time when we can.
Will you share the letter with us when you get it? I'm going to ask the last question to Chris. Chris, how do we engage civil society more in making Northern Ireland work?
Well, I think, first off, we have to. I think Enda this morning raised that in particular, that we have to make the peace process and the political process in Northern Ireland accessible to citizens. There are a number of initiatives ongoing at the moment, actually. Platform for Change being one project that comes to mind that is trying to engage civil society. I think elected representatives themselves have a responsibility to get out there and engage with people. And I know that in the Alliance Party, we make that a top priority. Listening to what people's genuine hopes and concerns are and representing them in the institutions on their behalf.
And as a peace-building organisation that works across the island of Ireland, we're interested in the North-South Consultative Forum, which is supposed to be about civic society and allowing experts of civic society to act in a role that would be supportive and helpful of both the Dáil and Stormont, but it hasn't really moved on. What's the Alliance Party's view on where they're going to go with that? It's Article 19 of the Good Friday Agreement is one of the areas that hasn't yet been implemented, the North-South Consultative Forum, which is about independent groups of people.
I think it's important. I mean, there are a couple of ways. I mean, first, on Bresha's advice, I think if we answer questions quickly and succinctly, that's one way of engaging people. I think the other way to do it is to listen to what people are actually saying and the concerns that they're raising and not always be talking about the things that you want to talk about. But I think most importantly, in terms of the consultative forum, I believe that building a sense of unity on the island of Ireland is important. And I don't mean that in a political sense. I simply mean that in a social sense, that people feel comfortable with being Irish, that people feel comfortable with being British on this island, and that people feel comfortable in their own skin. I don't think you can do that on one side of the border or another, and I don't think it's necessarily a political process. I think it is a process of change in society, and the only people who can really do that is society itself. So I don't think by excluding people from that process it's good. I also don't think politicians have all the answers. I think that's the reality. I think there's a lot of resource out there, experience and skill, and we are foolish not to tap it and use it to our advantage in the political system. So I think it's a missed opportunity and something that needs to be addressed.
All right. Well, even though politicians don't have all the answers, I'm going to ask Anna for just a few brief comments on it, Anna, because I'm very conscious the room has to be reorganised for the next event.
Well, I mean, in terms of really engaging with the communities, the voluntary sector is actually very good in helping the executive and government departments to do it, except that with public expenditure cuts, we are actually going to see a lot of funding cut to the voluntary sector, which is really reversing the process of openness and engagement with communities, and that's something we all need to be very mindful of. And in terms of the North-South Consultative Forum, we all went to Newcastle last year, and it was really talking about having a forum. And God knows when it is going to happen. There is a lot of resistance, I think, from the unionist parties.
Okay. Breeze, very quickly.
I suppose I feel very strongly that the community and voluntary sector led the way in peace building in Northern Ireland. We're way ahead of most of the political parties, and I make an exception
Alliance
and that. But Peter, I was really cross last night listening to the radio when I heard that a little project in, I forget where it was, has run out of funding, and this project gave carers of very severely disabled children a break for an hour a week or something. And what I would beg the politicians to do is to ensure that the cuts that are coming actually take the fat out of public bodies and out of the civil service and aren't passed down to the weakest link, which is the community and voluntary organisations who do, and I know this from lottery, in every part of Northern Ireland do extraordinary jobs for very little money. And I just think it's going to be very sad if we have what we always had, that the public bodies don't downsize, but actually the people feeling the cuts are those community and voluntary groups. I'm sorry to go on about this, I saw Seamus there, who live with uncertainty about funding every single year of their lives and still manage, I think, to do a superb job. And I think that what is unique about... And Peter said I had to mention Cooperation Ireland and Cooperation Ireland too.
It's good always to end on a round of applause. There are a number of questions still on Breege's clothes dryers, but sometimes some questions are best left hanging, so we'll let them sit there. So a couple of other points from it. No more selective schools, more Notting Hill Carnival than 12th of July. First barriers should be outside a police station. United Ireland, United Kingdom, United Ulster, okay. United Community, better than okay. Remove all murals in Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland remain part of the United Kingdom except on Fridays when it should be part of United Ireland. Create more agricultural land by draining the Irish Sea. One barrier to Lancashire via the Isle of Man. Second barrier from Wales to Dublin. Close Sellafield. Irish to be taught in all schools. Rename peace walls as what they are, hate walls. And maybe that's a good one to end on. Thank you very much from Irish Peace Centres.